Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Impact Factor. I am your host, Katie Van Aken, and this week I had a chance to meet and interview a really wonderful chemist who has a very interesting perspective on his time as a PhD student, and I'm excited for you to hear more. So here is Anurag Roy, PhD. Let's do it. Let's tell us your story. All right, so let's start. Anurag, where would you like to start? Do you want to start in undergrad? Do you want to start, when did you know you wanted to pursue the field that you pursued? Let's start there.
It's more about when I was in my master's. Okay. Not in the undergrads. That time I was still confused. Still, I should go for higher study or not, or I should jump to any other field. But when I did my master's, and then I came, then I realized that, okay, I'm doing better. So I should go for a bit of more higher study, and let's go for PhD. Because at this age, I feel, and the situation is, you know, like that, if I'm not getting anything, let's go for PhD. So PhD is not like that. So it's not like an open job that anybody can do. So, but that time when I was in master's, my thought was also like that. Okay, it's an open job. Okay, I'm not getting this, so I have a chance to get enrolled in the PhD, so let's jump it. But later I realized, no, it's a dedication, it's a meditation, and of course it's a hard job. So after my master's, when my score was a good score, so then I realized, okay, and my mom, dad is actually the leader of pushing me to the higher career. No, you should go for PhD. You're getting good marks, and your idea, your ideology, your higher study ambition is quite good. So it's a mix of all these elements. And then I thought, okay, let's go for the PhD and let's see how I can deal with this. So that's the way I enrolled to PhD. It was as such not an initial plan, but when I involve in my master's course and I get reach of the the subject knowledge, then I thought, okay, I need to explore a bit more, and for that I have to go for PhD.
Gotcha. So you said your parents were pushing you in this direction?
Very, very much, yeah. They inspire me.
Yeah. Do they have their PhDs, or do they?
No, not at all. No. They stopped their, my dad is graduate, but my mom in the school level. Yeah.
Wow. That's great. I mean, our parents have such an impact in our path. And so
I belong to a very mediocre, very middle class family.
Okay.
And nobody in my fraternity or my family fraternity or surroundings, my area, is no one done PhD before me. So it was a big thing for us also. So yeah. I'm the first doctorate in my family. And technically, first person who is studying currently or who is currently working outside India or outside my country.
Oh, okay.
So that's a big thing, because my family is very mediocre, very small earning member family. I have my younger sister also, so she also did her master's, and she's currently doing job back to my country. But yeah, always my parents are very inspired leaders for my life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they always say, yeah, no, go, you decide, and never distract me or never stop me to do anything.
Yeah.
Just dream it and try to make it possible.
I love that. That's great. It's a good mentality to go into a PhD with too.
Yeah, I get a lot of support from them.
So tell me about, did you do your master's in India?
Yes, I did my master's from the Indian School of Mines in chemistry 2013. And then I joined as a graduate apprentice training in Tata Steel. It's a very giant company in the steel industry. And then after the 6 months job, in the meantime, then I decide, no, I should go for higher study, PhD. So I enrolled my PhD in back to my hometown, which is in Calcutta, in India. In the institute called CSIR, Central Glass and Ceramic Research Institute, and I was a holder of Government of India's one of the big fellowship called Inspire PhD program. So I have my own fellowship, so I have a liability and freedom to choose the institute. So I have selected my hometown institute because so that I can I can get in touch with my family anytime.
Nice. Nice. And your PhD was in chemistry as well?
Yes, my PhD, my bachelor, master's, and PhD all are in chemistry. And if you ask me very particular way, so bachelor was chemistry honors because we have honors course in India and it's a 3 years course. Master's was in general chemistry, and then PhD is more about inorganic chemistry.
Oh, okay. So tell me more about that. So what was your, did you have a, well, let me back up. Did you have a thesis for your master's
Yes,
or was it mostly class? Okay, you did.
it's
What
called a
was,
dissertation. Yeah.
okay. And what was the focus of that?
Okay, in master's, I had a dissertation about the wastewater treatment using magnetic nanocomposite. So we have to develop a catalyst and especially a magnetic catalyst so that we can easily use to treat a wastewater and convert it to a clean water. And through my master's, I get my first published research paper in my life. So that's the first paper, and of course, it's a not big paper. A big impact factor paper, to be honest, but still, it's a very big thing being a master's student to get at the first publication, international peer-reviewed publication, and I did so hard work during my dissertation that last 6 8 months dissertation time, so I get to make it in a possible way of making a publication. So I was glad on that. And the work is basically to synthesize some iron oxide based magnetic nanoparticle, which can be treated for the wastewater, remedy treatment. Yeah.
And so you mix the nanoparticles in the wastewater.
Yes, we mix the advantage of using a magnetic nanoparticle is it's very easy to recycling, or it's easy to reuse again. So you just need a external magnet bar so that upon using that external magnet, you can easily recollect them, and again you can reuse it to some other wastewater. So that's the very quick advantage, very facile advantage you can use, and that's the benefit of any catalyst being magnetic. But there is a lot of non-catalytic, non-magnetic, catalyst available, because but the problem of the non-magnetic is the removal process. So you need to go for filtration or a lots of complex or time-bounded process. So that is why people prefer magnetic nanoparticle or magnetic property-based any catalyst.
Cool. That's very cool. So after your master's dissertation, when you were looking for PhD programs, were you thinking of continuing in that research area, or are you open to anything that came your way?
Actually, after my master's, I straight away joined as a research assistant, as I mentioned, in a very giant company called
Steel
Tata Steel.
company.
Yeah, it's a steel company. It's called the Tata Steel Limited, and my role was there actually to extract zinc from the galvanized steel. So in the galvanized steel, they used a zinc layer to protect the steel from moisture, and it's a corrosion provision. Protection that the steel doesn't get easily corrosion if you have a galvanized steel coating layer. But my job was those steels are already long time galvanized, and they have started corrosion because of their lifetime reduction. So there is a leaching of zinc. So I need to collect those zinc in a liquid form and to convert those zinc into zinc oxide. And those zinc oxide pigments can be used for this for the our room painting, like wall like
Oh,
room paints.
yeah, paint. Okay, yeah, I've heard that before. Yeah.
Yes. So that's the recycling, or that's the cycle that I need to follow in that industry, and it's a very a large industry. You can imagine it's R&D. I was in the R&D department, but we need to go for the trial, in different sectors, that how we can collecting the picklings and how we are converting to zinc oxide, blah blah blah. So that was the idea, or that was the project I was leading during my job, my first job in my life after master's. But after 4 or 5 months, I realized that it's a very standard job, 9 to 5 job. And they have a very set of protocols and a set of experiments that what I need to follow blindly. So I can't do my experiments, or if I have some thought in my mind, I can't experiment those things in those labs. That's the problem. And here, when I started discussing with my boss in that company, so he was also starting pushing me, okay, so you have this idea, so you should go for the PhD. And then again, I consult with my parents that this is the condition I'm facing. I don't like it's okay, it's a big company, blah blah blah, but it's a very protocol based, it's a very 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 common things that and I feel that can be done by anyone. Where is my brain? So what I'm here, my mom can do this also
Yeah.
being a non-master's person. So what is my brain utilization and where I can experiment my thoughts? So that's what the main motivation, to go for the higher study or in PhD further. And then I resigned the job and enrolled for PhD.
Nice. And so at that, what did you did how do I ask this? What were you sorry. So at that point you had been working with steel and zinc oxide, and were you trying to pursue a PhD in order to study some of the ideas you had from your job, or just generally be able to study chemistry in a way that lets you be creative and try new things out, like in any discipline, or you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah, I got your point. Definitely, all my jobs are, to be honest, related to chemistry. I don't need to do any non-chemistry based job still, but my office job or my R&D job is completely different to the PhD. So
Okay.
when I approach for the PhD, I work for solar cells. So yes. So when I got the fellowship and I started to find out the perfect host, to be honest, to my particular, because my intention was to stay at my hometown or my home city. So I was trying to find out which research institutes over there who can, who can take me in their PhD program. So when I consulted with my boss, my PhD supervisor over there, so she just got another project which is leading to the solar cells. And she was saying, so this is my project, and she was also a chemist. So this is my project, this is the case, so are you still interested? Then said, yes, of course, I'm interested. And actually, my PhD was done to find out alternative materials for dye sensitized solar cells.
Okay.
So just a gist, what is that?
Yeah.
Usually, the common solar cells or the photovoltaics devices, what we are aware, which is basically are leading by silicons. So the silicon solar cells or the silicon panels everywhere we can see. So mostly people are used to get this kind of solar cells nowadays. But there is a different kind of solar cells available, which we call the third generation solar cells or the emerging solar cells, where you can produce the solar cells at your home, at your lab in a solution process, and it's a very simply a few step approach that two or three steps, and you can get the same efficiency compared to the silicon. So getting the similar efficiency with a very easy process, that's why there are different materials involving. In dye sensitized solar cells, that's also an emerging technology of solar cells field or photovoltaic field. And here, titanium oxide, which is one of the popular oxide, which is a leader, which is a giant in this field. So my work was to find out an alternative of titanium oxide, because first of all, there are already a lot of work has been published with titania, and nothing new to do with this material. The material is almost stagnant, or it's almost constant. We can't do any revolve, or we can't do any further upgrade the material. So to upgrade the overall system or the overall solar cells performance, we need to find out an alternative solution. And here comes some different other oxides which can replace titania, having the same property but not involving titania. So that was my challenge, and that was in my PhD. So I have developed some very pioneering material called barium stannate, cadmium stannate. It's a stannate-based perovskite system, zinc stannate, and some different nanostructures through which we can entrap more light, and we get a very high efficiency in a very quick time.
Wow. Very cool. So taking a standard material that's used throughout the field, your project was to basically create or design alternative materials that were then characterized to be
Yes.
as productive and efficient as the standard one. Very cool. I must say that strikes me as requiring a lot of creativity, which is sort of what you were seeking when you left your job, right?
Yes, At least I can experiment my thoughts. That's the benefit, or that's the platform what PhD give us.
Yeah, that's very cool. So, when did you finish your PhD?
2019.
Right before the pandemic. So,
Oh yes, before.
yeah. So
Luckily.
tell me about what you did after that.
I straight away joined as a postdoctoral researcher in the University of Exeter, which is in UK,
Okay.
and I'm also currently continuing my job here since 2019
Ah, as a postdoc.
as a postdoc. Yeah, right now I
Okay.
have promoted to research fellow, so
Okay.
it's a promotion as I'm here continuously for 5 years. So yeah.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Do you think or know if you want to be in academia long term, or is do you
Yes.
have other pursuits? Yeah, okay.
Right now, my intention to stay in academia, and I find that is the most best place to for me to survive, because the fittest are the best survival. The Darwin's law. So I believe that I'm fittest within academia, so I can survive here. If I shift somewhere here, I may be the most unfit person, and maybe anything can happen in my life. So it's better to stay here. Unless salary, position, blah blah blah, doesn't matter. But it's a balance between all those criteria, all those points in my life. So I thought, yeah, I'm right now focusing on further academic career. Yeah.
And I assume that means you want to be a professor one day?
I hope so. I'm trying out. I started application for not professor straight away, but maybe assistant professor or lecturer. But as you know, it's a competitive market. So I need to make myself best person for the application. And I'm trying to make it myself best. Yeah. But yes, my intention is to become a lecturer next.
Yeah. Well, yes, it's very competitive, but I wish you luck.
Thank you.
So here's a kind of a unique question. Is there something that you miss about your time as a PhD student?
Yes. Because what I missed is my personal life, you know. PhD, I have a lot of time to do many things except research. I'm a singer, also I sing. And and I love cooking and also roaming. I visited a lot of places, and after getting postdoctoral researcher, you have inbound to do a lot of things except your research. Means your office job is quite broad right now. It's not only your job. In PhD, it's only your job. You are doing your own stuff. But in a postdoc, you are definitely doing your own stuff, but you have to take care of other PhD stuffs or other office or research work also. So this time management is a very crucial that I still miss. And of course, I can't go anywhere anytime. So because I have an office bounded, a limited, contract, and I have to report to them every month or say every week, something like a meeting way. So this time-bounded things are pretty much high at this moment. But PhD, it was a little bit reflex. It's more freedom, so you can go anywhere, you can do anything. And that I lack right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how much the PhD is really like an independent journey. And it's like, and that can be lonely, right? But the benefits are what you just described, is that, you know, it's every decision definitely is up to you.
Yeah. I'm not saying that I'm not dependent, or I'm very much strict. My office or my university is very strict. It's not like that. They are giving all the independency, but still, unintentionally, more work is coming. For example, I'm correcting a paper in on Sunday. I'm not supposed to do work on Sunday, but still I'm correcting. It's just because of I need to finish by Tuesday. So that from Tuesday, I need to work on another paper. So that's the timeline I need to calculate in my brain and according to, So these things are happening postdoc, and that's very genuine for everyone. Because as I mentioned, it's not just only for my work, it's also my group work that I need to take care.
It's absolutely
my duty.
It is your duty. It's the job, it's more responsibility. So you mentioned you're a singer. Do you have the chance to do some of these hobbies outside of work these days?
Yes, I sing. I perform a bit in college days, and also when we all friends are gathered, so there will be a guitar singing.
Okay.
And those kind of things, but not, no, I'm not a professional one.
Yeah.
But still, we had a training, so a little bit of that. And also, I love cooking. I'm a very good cook, I can say. So cooking is one of my passion. If someone asks me now that suppose you have to choose another job except academia, so I will definitely choose cooking, or want to be a cook, or I want to be, open a restaurant. So that's my another dream.
Well, it's always good to have those other dreams, just in case.
Yes,
just
always. And I still believe all chemists are very good in cooking.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. They're also very good at brewing beer and even like coffee. There's just like a lot of of chemistry involved in a lot of those.
Yes. My wife always says me that your coffee is just amazing. How do you make it? I just said, simply, I just mix the coffee, milk and sugar. But she said, no, it's something else. What is the trick? See, I said, nothing. You stand by me and just watch me. Well, how can I make the coffee? Then you can, you know, I can make sure that there is no tricks and nothing. It's just a simple latte preparation or simple cappuccino preparation. That's it. He said, no, you did. I said, that's the chemist hand.
It's the chemist. It's the extra care you have for every ingredient. Yeah. That's all it takes. That's funny. That's great. What else? Oh, so your group now that you're in as a postdoc, do you have PhDs that you mentor? What is the like size of the group and kind of where do you
exist? It's a very big group and it's a very diverse group, to be honest. We have 12 nationalities and 26 people group. So we have two professor in my group and four postdocs. Four or five postdocs, yeah. So I'm the senior one currently. So and I have three PhD students, to whom I'm co-supervising.
That's a big group, but it's fun, right?
Because that's a big group, lot of nationality. So because I'm mentioning the nationality thing because different people, you know, have different ID and different culture. So unless you can mix with them and across, you know, the different people from different nations, you can't understand what they would think. It's not necessarily what the way I'm thinking, the similar way they also think. But when I mix with them, I had a student from Saudi, from Turkey, and one from Estonia, that's the Eastern Europe country, next to Russia. So good. I came to know many things about you know, their life, their family, their background. It's really interesting.
What are the challenges of a big group like that?
To maintain the similar mentality to everyone. You know, it's very, very, very difficult that suppose I'm just giving you an example. Somebody is working with something and that using some instrument, and if the instrument goes bad or something happen, so it stop using the instrument for others people, right? Unless until the instrument get recovered or we repair it. So it takes time. It's not an instant job. But, you know, the other people who have suffered a lot from those from this incident, they started to complaining each other that why I should wait. It's not my fault. Why I should wait for, you know, start my work. So this kind of, I know it's a very silly thing, but it's a very problematic thing when something it takes a very long term. So to maintain the unity, to maintain the similar thoughts, the similar, you know, ethics to the group, it's really challenging. And as you know, the professors are really busy and they are not, to be honest, you know, very in-person, in-role or be live all the time with the students. So being a postdoc, that's I need to act as a mediator between students and professor in that way. So to maintain that chain, it's more challenging. And especially when you have different nationality country people, so that matters. Really matters.
Do you have the experience to teach or TA or
I'm a teacher also, means I teach also here, but it's not my full-time job. So here my role is 80% of my time is for the research and 20% is for the teaching. And in the teaching, my courses are involved with the material, material exploration for solar cells, not only solar cells, renewable energy. So because I'm in the Department of Renewable Energy here, and here And here we have a master's and bachelor's. Both courses are dedicated for renewable engineering. So I took the course. I usually take the course for the material chemistry. And yeah, so it's a 20% like once in a month or twice in a month, something like that. Depends on the calendar. Yeah.
Gotcha. Do you like teaching?
Yes, I like teaching. I really like teaching. I really like, that's also a dream that I have 100 students and I'm taking a class in front of them. Some students are, you know, raising their hands, asking questions. I'm answering them. So that's so filmy things. I still believe it exists in this real world, because in my schooling time or my college time, back to, 15 years back, there was a lot of those options are, and that's a used to sign in every school and college. But nowadays, in modern days, especially the gadgets, phones, people forget about the classroom culture, so that's what I always like, the classroom cultures and the relationship between a teacher and students. So yes, I loved it.
That's great. I think a lot of PhD students have the sort of dream of becoming a professor, but have limited experience to teach in those kind of early years. And I think it's so important to experience it and recognize if you like it or don't before you sign up to be a professor, where it's part of your job most of the time, right?
Yeah, it's really crucial, and especially in these countries, it's very important that how much percentage of your time you are involving to which job. So that's actually counted. So it's because I have hired as a researcher, not for a teacher. Right. So I need to maintain my calendar in such a way that my research part is more than my teaching part. So these things are very important, but yes, there is an opportunity of teaching so that at least you can get some, basic or fundamental idea or an experience, so that in future it helps you to make it your curriculum or your syllabus or your program a better way.
Yeah, for sure. So I think I'm going to move to my three wrap-up questions, if that's okay with you. Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So my first question is, looking back on it, what was something challenging you faced as a PhD student at some point?
Lot of challenge. But the most difficult challenge is, your experimental success. Because as I mentioned, for my case, I have to find out some alternative material compared to TiO2. So this is a very, very big risky thing, that is there really some alternative options available? And if so, how can I prove they are actually alternative? Science needs proof.
Yep.
So upon, up to third year of my PhD, I don't have any single publication, and I don't have anything to show to the people, to the audience, that, I'm a researcher. That's a really struggling and frustrating period I crossed. Then even that time I was deciding, or I thought maybe I should move to some other field, just quit PhD, just do something else, because every day I'm getting negative results. Whatever I'm thinking at experimentally and practically, it fails. So that's actually dragged me to think about something else. No, just stop it. Just try some acting. Let's see if in that field is good or not.
Yeah.
Okay, or try some singing. Like this way. So these are some tricky things that are all my inspiration, motivation is getting down just because of I'm not getting a single positive response from my experimental design. But any PhD students right now, means I also suggest myself that keep patience and try to understand what is the problem and what will be the most effective solution. say anything or to find out or solution is very, very difficult task. You can say, okay, this is bad, this is bad, this is not working, and problems are there, but finding a solution of those problems are rare. So that's the difficulties. And when I sit back, and of course there is a big role of my supervisor, who is who helped me a lot, and she was amazing. Always I have some problem, or whenever my experiment fails, I straight away go to her and just discuss, this is the case where I am wrong. Please judge me, please criticize me, so that it helps my brain to understand, okay, I have to think in that way. The way I'm thinking is the bad thing. So those, kind of sedimentation is very, very important in your brain. And that is why the most difficult task is to experimental failure in any PhD. And that actually demotivates you. And that lost your inspiration of pursuing PhD, and you will get more frustrated about academics. So why should I stay in academics? So this kind of question will come whenever there is some negativity. But of course, if there is a positive thing, there is a negative thing, no doubt. But if something is negative, end of the day, we have to think how we can resolve it. And once we resolved it, that's impacting far, 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 far more intense than the negative things.
Yes, absolutely. No, this is so true, and I feel like everybody goes through that period where they say, well, what if I just open a coffee shop? That would be much easier,
Easier, yeah.
One thing I learned too from an older PhD student in my group was when you're in that period of like everything's failing, is to celebrate tiny victories. So like a example was if everything's failing, but then one of your experiments fails less, like it doesn't fail as bad, that's a victory, right?
That's a victory.
And so you're making progress, it's just not, solution progress yet, but it's in the right direction. And I remember very clearly learning that skill, and it was really helpful.
That's what. So getting something is better than getting nothing.
yes yeah yeah exactly Okay, so my next question is, and maybe it's related to your story just now, is what advice would you give to yourself in the first year of your program?
It's a very important question, and I feel the optimal resource utilizations and making more collaborations. That's my next target, to manage the time, as I mentioned, to utilize or to optimize my resources, and also to connect more and more people for collaboration. I mean, research collaboration work, so that I can involve many people to my idea, to my project, and it just not only for to your a person individual development, it also for the theme, the work, the idea of the science, because the way a chemist can see or analyze the things, it not necessarily a physicist or a biologist can see in that way. So they have some different approach, they have some different vision to explain those kind of things. So for that, here is comes the more interdisciplinarity of your research, and that is my next challenge. And my next, motivation or whatever you say, that in upcoming 1 year that I'm targeting to make more collaboration with more interdisciplinarity team or disciplinary community, so that I can enrich my work, my thought, my idea, and whatever the idea I have that can justify with the best solution. And of course, time management. I have to manage my time. I know somehow, end of the day when I sit realized what I did today. Nothing. I have to write a proposal, and I'm still struggling last 3 weeks to, just to write a 500 words. I know I have time, but still I'm not concentrating because I have to do some other paper correction. I have to go for shopping for my living stuff. I have to go to repairing my cycle. I have to go for something else. I have to go to G my doctor to see my throat pain. Something is happen every day. And end of the day, a 500 words I'm not unable to write down. So this time management, I no, I'm just talking to myself. No, I have to sit today the whole 6 hours, no disturb. I have to write just. I need 6 hours at this stage to write 500 words, just because of the lack of concentration and the time management thing. So that will be also a prioritized area in at least upcoming 1 or 2 years.
I it's funny you said when you mentioned that you look back and you're like, what did I do today? I have this very distinct memory of during my program, at the end of year four, I looked back and said, what did I do
What to
this
do?
year?
Yeah,
Like, I couldn't
I
tell you what like year four of my degree was
know.
focused on,
Yes.
but here we are.
You know, I'm a very early riser. Means early in the sense, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yes,
So
that's
I
early.
wake, yeah, 6:30. Not for the gym, by the way, or not for any physical exercise. Because 6:30, then I have to get ready, take a shower, or have some breakfast, and straight away go to the lab. So I start my day around 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's almost, as contract wise, I supposed to do work for 7 hours, but I came back home. Night 8 o'clock, so it's almost 12 hours for me. I'm not complaining, but I'm just saying that whatever the time I'm investing, it should be productive. So somehow I feel that maybe it is productive, but not that much efficient. Because after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I realize what I did today. Just
It's been
replying
7 hours. I
the
don't know what I
email.
did.
Yeah, and I just replying the emails. That's it. So email replying is also a big task, you know.
Big task. I know. Tell me about it. Yes. Well, that's very good advice. So my last question is, looking back on it, we've talked about the challenges and kind of those moments where you're saying, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. But my experience is that everybody kind of has at least one, if not a few, like really positive memories from their time as a grad student, whether it was a trip, a conference, or a kind of a late night in the lab memory with their colleagues. And I was wondering if you had any that you would like to share.
Yes, definitely. I have a lot of memories,
Good.
and I remember a quote. We and that is actually we actually don't choose between experience, we choose between memories of experience. So I still believe those quotes. I don't know whose quote, but I somehow I saw these things. Yeah, as you mentioned, that every tiny moment of success we need to celebrate, and that is the biggest thing I'm missing here in my current job or in current laboratory or group. Because I still remember when someone's paper is just accepted, just accept it, it's not online, okay? So we started demanding treat from that guy or from that person. Oh, your paper accepted, it's a big thing. Means that time a paper acceptance is a massive thing, like Oscar winning. So nobody in the world has done this. You are very exclusive, you won this. So this kind of, so just give treat. And that person is constantly replying, it's not online, so please wait for the online version. Then only I can give you treat, because if the online version is not coming, there is no proof that I have a paper. So and if the online version, I said it's official thing is accepted, that means it automatically comes to online. No, if something happened, if they change their mind, if that. So I know it's a silly thing, but in that age or in that time, it was a, such a such a such a you know very very funny moment for all of us. And for every reason, we deserve a treat. Even somebody went for a conference, and he or she won for a poster prize or something. And we have a big party, and we have a always big party. Not only that, even there is no reason of party, But still, there is a party. How? Just the whole day everybody worked and so tired. So let's say in the evening, 5 or 5:30, we gather up and we said, okay, we are hungry, we are hungry. So everybody's hungry at that time. We need some snacks or something. And then people decide to just hang out somewhere. So we just suddenly make a plan and suddenly go to some place just to have some snacks, and later we realize it we took a dinner. So we had a dinner, so we ate a lot. So those things. And definitely, as I mentioned, I love traveling, and during my PhD I presented almost more than 15 posters across India. Even I was in UK also in my PhD. So these conferences are itself of big memories, because it not only for your scientific collaboration or your scientific exposure, also it's a part of your, exploring the new places. So, in India, we have everything. We have Himalayas, mountains, ice, snow. We have desert. We have mangroves, we have big forested, so all the things in the world you can find in a single country. So I have been in the various places in India during the conference. So I still remember I was in Kashmir. It's one of the most beautiful place in India. So, and it has a very snowy mountains, and we had a poster in a snowy campus. So you just feel the experience. I never been to, in my life, I never touched a snow until that time. So when I go for a poster presentation in a campus where I can see a snow, so that's a dream. And I said, whatever the poster, doesn't matter. Just end the science. Go and explore. So yeah, these things I still miss. Here is okay, it's fine, but as you are aging, your life experience is more harder, or more concentrate, I would say. So you miss those things. And I'm not saying that it's take away your freedom, but somehow it affect your freedom.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's and I think about it too, like a lot of people continue to go to conferences as they become postdocs and professors, but there's something special about traveling to a conference as a PhD student and having little to no responsibility other than presenting a poster for an hour out of the week, and then getting to kind of experience the whole party that is the conference and meet people and visit places, and it's a great experience.
And also in my PhD group, we are in personal level, we are also connected to each other. So suppose some guys whose elder brother is getting married, so we are all the group is also invited to go there, visit their place. So that's not for a conference, that's a personal visit, but still that's a memory. So these things are it's still I'm missing. And if and as I mentioned, in PhD we didn't get, or we didn't lose any opportunity or any chance to celebrate anything. Just celebrate. Just celebrate. And if it even one of my senior, who is currently a professor now in India, so he got two rejection, spontaneously from two big journals. After even one is after peer reviewed, and he was so frustrated, so out. So I just took him to the pub. Let's go. Chill, enjoy a night out, just enjoy. And to be honest, within 3 months he got the same publication in another big journal.
There you go. Then you go to the pub again,
Again.
celebrate
Oh no,
that,
that's a bigger pub now. Just, it's okay. Means I know these are some factors that can determine our career level or professional level, but this is not our life.
Very good. Very good. Oh, that's good. I love hearing people's positive memories and the good stories, because I also have some memories.
I also, I always say to cherish your positive memory. There are lots, as I mentioned, that negative memories are all the time. Maybe 80% things are negative in your life or in someone's life or in this world, current scenario, 80% is negative. But whatever this 20% positive, make those positivities impact or, you know, its concentration in such a high level so that it can suppress the 80% negativity's impact. So that's the ideology I think we need to spread out, or we need to always continuing in our life.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That's a great, great sentiment to end on, Anurag. Thank you so much for coming on the show. This was so fun.
Thank you, Katie, for connecting with me. And I have seen your previous episodes in your channel. So that was, I was also a bit of motivating or encouraging that, okay, let's connect with Katie and let's see how can I explore my things with you. So thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to connect with you. And it was so nice to meet you today.
Thanks to Anurag for coming on the show. If you or someone you know wants to be interviewed on Impact Factor, feel free to reach out via Instagram and follow us for updates at Impact Factor Pod. Thank you all for listening and have a great week.